You're listening to Improvisations. We're talking with John Beasley. We've been listening to his new recording, which is called Monkestra Volume 2. Of course, there was a Monkestra Volume 1, which was equally fantastic, but I actually think this one's even better. I'm kind of curious to see what you think. Which one is your favorite, or do you have a favorite?
I don't know if I have a favorite. It's kind of like, you know, asking what your favorite kids are, you know. But I think we've evolved. I know that I evolved a bit as an arranger and as a band. You know, we have more time as a band together, of course. And I think I've grew as an arranger a bit between Volume 1 and Volume 2.
Do you think that working on Monk music so specifically and so thoroughly has actually changed the way that you compose, arrange, those types of things?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, to me, Monk was you know, he represents the being courageous and having the courage to be individual, you know. And you do that by, you know, trying to find your inner music that you hear in your head and finding a way to get it out. And then if you have to, you break the rules, you know. He built his whole sound. His sound is so individual. So I took that and the spirit of improvisation and tried to put it in to my arranging. So in a lot of ways, I did these arrangements, you know, singing into my phone, so I wasn't encumbered by what I knew that I could play on the piano, for instance, you know. You know, it's more freer for me to sing bass lines and grooves and tempos and change up and sort of get a closer connection to the music that was in my head, right? So, in a way, that's the spirit of improvisation, you know, and being able to get it into Sibelius or wherever, and, you know, fast out enough so it's like a communication.
Did you happen to read the biography that came out, the Monk biography that came out, like, 3 or 4 years ago?
Sure, Robin Kelly.
In any way, did reading that biography inform how you attacked these arrangements or which compositions you chose to focus on?
It didn't affect what tunes I chose to focus on. Basically, that happened just by me listening and then, or, you know, looking at a lead sheet and playing it on the piano and going, wow, well, can I do this? And then getting it into my head so that I can get it out. The tune selection is basically what sort of spoke to me at that moment that I wanted to start an arrangement. The book is, you know, it's fantastic. It's a great resource to go back to, you know, after I wrote some of these tunes, you know, I'm able to go back and kind of learn about what he was going through in his life when he wrote these tunes and, you know, maybe explain that to an audience. So much of this material was written last summer, you know, when, you know, we were going through heavy political times with our election and you know, Black Lives Matter and, you know, a lot of racial, cultural things were being discussed again, you know. And, you know, it led me to think of what, you know, Monk was going through in his life, you know, 70 years ago or whatever. And so the book helped me kind of go through that and realize that, you know, socially and culturally, you know, they were going through really, you know, it was hard to be a jazz musician and be a genius and an African-American genius at that time, you know, and sort of the hurdles they had to go through to get this music across. And so that really inspired a lot of the writing in this next record, Volume 2.
And you've got a lot of guests on this particular recording. Diane Reeves is on there, Kamasi Washington, Regina Carter, Dante Winslow. How easy was it to get these great people to come play on this music, and what was your experience like working with some of the guests?
Well, the whole project, just from the beginning, you know, it's been a labor of love. And, you know, getting musicians to be in the band was not a problem because everybody likes Monk, and, you know, they might think our take on it might be a little unique, so people appreciate that. As far as guest artists, you know, the first one, Volume 1, I had Gary Burton, and he was like, sure, man, all I had to do was ask, you know. he was way cool about it. Gregoire Marais, and on this one, you know, I've known Diane since we were in our 20s, you know, our early 20s, and so I know, and we'd done some live gigs where she guested with the band, and it just was a perfect fit for her. Kamasi, I've known since he was a kid here in L.A. Pedrito, I was in a band for, you know, 5 or 6 years with a Cuban band with all Cubans, and Pedro was there, so I learned so much about Afro-Cuban rhythms and playing with the clave, of course, and Cuban music in general from him.
And so when you're putting together your arrangement for Crisscross, does the fact that Pedrito Martinez is on the record and you know he's going to be on there, does that inform how you arrange that particular piece of music?
No, I did the arrangement before I reached out. I knew that I had this rhythm in my head and this tempo, and I knew that he would help me flesh it out after I'd done the chart. You know, he'd be the perfect guy. You know, I really wanted to really go deep into the Afro-Cuban world of mixing. You know, they play in 6/8 rhythm and straight time all at the same time. So I really wanted to explore that, you know, with a large ensemble and make it groove, make it danceable.
If you've just joined us, or even if you haven't, we're talking with John Beasley, the man who runs the Monkestra, and he'll be performing with the Knoxville Jazz Orchestra here at the Bijou Theater in Knoxville on Tuesday, October the 3rd at 8 p.m. Well, let's hear Crisscross from Monkestra Volume 2. John Beasley from his new recording, Monkestra Volume 2. He's talking on the phone with Improvisations. He'll be coming here to perform with the Knoxville Jazz Orchestra on Tuesday, October the 3rd. And I just checked and tickets are selling fast. So I'm anticipating a sellout. Don't know for sure, though. People coming to the shows are, you know, do you find that most of them have a large familiarity with the Monk songbook, or are you exposing people to it for the first time? What are you finding?
I'm finding that it's a wide net. You know, there's people that for sure come because they want to hear Monk and they love Monk's music, and then there's people that may have heard it on the radio for the first time and, you know, are excited about, you know, what they're just hearing for the first time. It's great to see young people in the audience. You know, because we play. You know, we play some R&B based or Afro-Cuban and a little hip-hop in there. You know, they come because, wow, that's a different way, different take on that. And, you know, I try to encourage people to get up and move and dance if they want. And I think that's sort of missing from modern jazz these days. And I think it would be great to you know, it's a way for an audience to participate in the music, you know. And so I encourage that. So you see, now I'm seeing all kinds of people. It's great. You know, all generations are coming out.
I would have to say, if I were to make a guess based on all of the jazz CDs that have come in here since I've been at the station, the largest number of, you know, tribute CDs or a jazz release focusing on one composer would be Monk. I think Monk would be the winner of that contest.
I've heard that Duke Ellington is the most recorded jazz composer, but you know he had like what 4,000 or 5,000 songs.
Right.
Monk is the second most recorded composers with only about 80 songs. So what does that tell you? That's amazing, right?
Yeah, it is. And one of the things about, and I talked with Vance Thompson from the Knoxville Jazz Orchestra about you and your records. And I think one of the things that make the Monkestra records so wonderful to listen to is that the arrangements are really impossible to predict. You know, when a song starts, I think I'm going to know where it's going, or I see what, you know, you're doing Ugly Beauty. I think I know, oh, I bet I know what he'll do with this. And it's always different, and it's always really interesting. Is that challenging to honor the music, which is so amazing, but to really do something no one has done before, which is hard because of how many people have interpreted Monk music?
Well, I think that's the challenge of being a jazz musician in general, that, you know, you how you interpret the song you're playing, you know, to get it out of your head and not to be afraid to make mistakes, not be afraid to let the mistakes lead to something new as well. So, you know, that's what I really worked hard at on this record is, you know, letting my imagination, you know, come through. So if that's what you heard, I mean, and also I kind of felt like maybe I'd take heat for, you know, changing some of the stuff drastically or not, but I didn't. And I'm glad I stuck with my honesty in a way, you know. I mean, I can I read a quote from Robin Kelly, his book?
Yeah.
For you? This is really interesting. Duplicating Monk's sound has never been the point. He always said, play yourself. He say, play yourself, lay at the core of Monk's philosophy. He understood it is art's universal injunction. He demanded originality in others, right? And he emboldened it in everything he did, in his piano technique, in his dress, in his language, his humor, in the way he danced, in the way he loved his family, raised his children, and above all, his compositions. Original did not mean being different for the hell of it. For Monk, to be original meant reaching higher than one's limits, striving for something startling and memorable, and never being afraid to make mistakes. Originality is not always mastery, nor does it always yield success, but it's always very hard work. To me, that says it all, you know.
We've been talking with John Beasley, who will be performing with the Knoxville Jazz Orchestra Tuesday, October the 3rd at the Bijou Theater, celebrating the music of my musical hero, Thelonious Monk. Well, I'm really excited about it. I noticed there are just so many great celebrations of Monk music going on around the country because of the 100th birth anniversary. But I'm really stoked that we get one in Knoxville, especially with John Beasley, who's been our guest on Improvisations.
Thanks for having me, and I look forward to seeing you all out there, and I hope your audience really realizes and appreciates that y'all have a jazz station in their area like you have.
It is our privilege, sir. You're listening to Improvisations. One more from the Monkestra. This is Ugly Beauty, Panonica. This evening's interview subject, John Beasley, he'll be performing at the Bijou Theater October the 3rd, which is a Tuesday, the Knoxville Jazz Orchestra. That was Ugly Beauty Panonica. I will return, and I will bring more jazz with me. I promise. By the way, this is the WUOT podcast version of my interview with John Beasley. The actual interview was a little bit longer, and the music selections were a little bit longer, but that's why things are different in different technologies. I don't have a point here, and now I will stop talking.